You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Purina and their certified therapy dogs, like Hanley. Say hi, Hanley! Hanley is one of 30 therapy dogs Purina has helped get certified to support kids struggling with their mental health. Purina employees are volunteering their time and family pets like Hanley to help make pet therapy more accessible to patients, students, and kids like me. Learn more about Purina's pet therapy program at purina.com/mental health.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings. Why are you listening to this show? The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Sugat, don't you think this is pretty solid promotion for 80 for Brady?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
80 for Brady.
A tweeter writes in, this Tom Brady announcing his retirement exactly 1 year after his first announcement and just days before he has a movie releasing in theaters all time. Look at me, Louie.
Look at me, Louie.
When a speech ends with love you all, which can never be true, it's just because you don't know how to end the speech, right? Tom Brady ended that video that we think is blocks from here. It was recorded blocks from here, Stu Gatz. He was probably out there as you were coming in this morning smoking a heater.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended his retirement speech with love you all. That's always insincere, correct?
Yeah. Yep. It's a throwaway. I don't really know how to end this thing. Here's the, you know, generic kind of cliche way to end it. Love you all. No, you don't. I mean, come on. I mean, I love everybody. I
mean. You really don't need to take this one to the debate desk.
I do. I do want to take it to the debate desk because Stugatz, you have to understand.
It's a throwaway line.
Stugatz is a little bit crazy now. I don't know if because Brady is retiring, he all of a sudden thinks that there is winning available to others because he was muttering under his breath during the break. And I don't know why, what triggered this. He's like, this reduces my chances of Rodgers
to the Jets?
To the New York Jets.
Yeah. Well, it does. I mean, yesterday I announced that Tom Brady is going to the San Francisco 49ers. I'm going to stay entrenched there for a minute because he could come back any minute. So I'll stay entrenched right there. But now that the Niners job is open, it's the easier path, the NFC. Aaron Rodgers looks like he's headed out of Green Bay. And I don't know if they have, you know, what Green Bay wants in terms of draft picks and all that. But now Aaron Rodgers has options, and he has better options than the Jets.
Stugatz, you're missing the central theme to Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to go to the Niners because then what would his excuse be if they lose? He's got to go somewhere where it's like, oh, well, what is he supposed to do? He's playing for the Jets or the Raiders.
It's why I thought he would go to the Jets in the first place. Like, you could take that organization to a Super Bowl. That would be a great way. The bar is set so low, mm-hmm. we can only exceed it. Mm-hmm. In San Francisco, he goes there. You're right, I mean, he has to win a Super Bowl.
You guys are saying
but that, so does Kyle Shanahan. double. And he might not want him. That's where we're back.
Well, you're not back. I mean, you are back because Schefter said that they're not trading him to an NFC team.
Oh, God. Thank you, Adam.
Did you forget about that? Like, why is it? That seems kind of silly, does it not? To not trade Aaron Rodgers to an NFC team, even if the best offer is coming from an NFC team?
They did it initially with Brett Favre all those years ago. They refused to trade him to an NFC
team. He had to work his way back to Minnesota, right?
The difference is, though, Brett Favre had a backup that was, everyone knew, like, oh, this guy's going to be good, right? Why, like,
no, I don't think you're remembering that, right? There was question marks about Aaron Rodgers.
I'm just saying, like, what's the relevance of an NFC team? Like, they're going to be terrible when they trade them. They're not going to be good.
Don't you find that weird?
It's very weird.
I remember when that retirement was approaching the first time.
Mm-hmm.
They drafted Brian Brohm, I think, in the second round. They weren't completely sold. They had to see it.
I mean, they did go to the NFC Championship game that last year with Favre. And
no, he's talking about what Aaron Rodgers was on the bench. They were several years on the bench as a first-round pick.
Yeah,
it seemed like they had Love a guy in waiting, yes.
Right.
No, Love and Rodgers are kind of like the same deal. You have the same kind of question marks about Love.
But there are other guys available. Like, I can see Derek Carr maybe going to the Packers or something like that, you know?
Do you think the Packers are a quarterback away from being good? That's my question. Like, think about that.
Well, but they had a two-time MVP.
Okay.
And it was a year ago, and I don't know how much his deterioration. I mean, it might be age, but it might be also a hurt thumb on his throwing hand.
My point is, if you're the Packers and the best package comes from in the conference, you cannot behave as if trading him in conference is going to jeopardize your chances for anything.
Why, teams do that all the time, though. Like, when the Nets were shopping Kevin Durant, the Knicks had everything they wanted, and the Nets were like, no, we're not trading them to the Knicks.
I don't think Durant wanted to go to the Knicks either. That might have been Durant saying no.
Amin's point is basically, wherever they trade Rodgers isn't going to matter to the Packers, because the Packers are not, whatever's left on Aaron Rodgers' career, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is, that's not how close the Packers are at this moment. So it doesn't really matter if they trade him within the conference.
But they might be with like a Derek Carr. I don't know.
You think they're a Derek Carr away from...
Come on. The NFL is weird.
Brock Purdy just got to the NFC Championship game.
If they weren't good enough with the reigning two-time MVP, they're not going to be good enough with Derek Carr.
But to Stugatz's point, it would be Derek Carr plus the pieces they get in exchange for Aaron Rodgers.
Right. He's got
Watson.
Being
the mediator here. Yeah.
Let's do it the way that Amin wants to do it, which is Aaron Rodgers sits down with his pro-con list. You're saying that he puts very high on his pro list, find a team that can't blame me for losing.
They got to be good, but not too good, right?
Right.
So the Jets, great defense. So he's like, okay, that's good. That gives me a chance. But if I'm unsuccessful with the Jets, like Stugatz said, no one's going to be like Aaron Rodgers or the bum. They're going to be like, oh my God, he got them to the AFC Championship game or whatever.
In fact, I will tell you this. A lot of Jet fans will say the best feeling they've ever had as a Jet fan was the 8-3 start with Brett Favre. I mean, it was glorious,
the
Dan.
The best feeling.
It was such a good time in my life. I mean, it went downhill after that, but it was such a great time in my life. But no expectations. And everyone loved Favre there in New York. They did. Simply for going 8-3.
Well,
I mean,
not everyone.
Not everyone.
That's like Brady saying, I love you all.
There were some issues with Brett Favre from New York.
Put it lightly. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I wanted to ask the group about something that happened over the weekend where Louis C.K. sold out a couple of Madison Square Garden shows, which is just crazy for a comedian to be able to do, period. I mean, I'm still not used to the idea of Kevin Hart selling out football stadiums. To be able to sell out Madison Square Garden twice as a comedian is a bit crazy.
MSG.
And
Mecca.
Mm-hmm. And he also live streamed it on the internet, and I think had about 50,000 people watching, doing it himself. Now, Louis C.K. was trying to do some of this stuff before the scandal, and largely he has been canceled. For those of you who think he hasn't been because he can do it on his own somehow, because MSG offers him a stage and he does it on the internet, he's been, you know, he hasn't been on the late night circuit. He hasn't done Saturday Night Live. He had done it like 5 times in 5 years. He's not doing talk shows. No production companies are
just
using
on
him.
Rogan.
Yeah, but I'm saying he lost. There was some things for those saying, complaining. How could he sell out Madison Square Garden? There are things that have been lost here. Most he's radioactive. Most companies will not touch him. So he has to do it alone. I just can't believe that he can do it alone. I don't believe I'm surprised that his staying power is so strong that he is. And I think he's great at stand up comedy, that he is actually able to find a place where he can do it on his own, even though he's not getting the support of major entities.
Cancel culture refers to basically the mainstream avenues. He used to have a TV show, a very successful TV show. He was doing late night circuits. He was going on SNL. Mainstream entertainment industry has shunned him. He's not on TV. He's not doing movies, right?
If MSG Enterprises isn't mainstream as a venue, I hear you. He's not streaming on any platform right now yet. I could see it happening in the future, but performing at MSG, that's the... As Stugat said, the Mecca. That is one of the most famous entertainment venues in the entire world.
But it's still, there's a level of separation as a venue operator that's not, that you get, rightly or wrongly, that you get that a network does not get. It doesn't get that same benefit of the doubt of, hey, well, I'm just carrying it. I'm just making money. Don't look at me. I don't really like him or whatever, right? The venue can do that, can get away with that. Then the other part, and the reason why he can sell out the venue, Dan, because again, people have proven this time and time again, absent cancel culture. It's if you have an audience, we live in a day and age. If I have an audience, I can make it happen. And Mike mentioned, oh, he was on Rogan. Well, Rogan is an example of someone who's like, you know what? I don't care if I kind of offend or defy the conventionality of society. I know I have this many people who are motivated and will support what I do. And as long as I have their support and their money, I don't need the mainstream money.
How many comedians could actually sell out two nights of Madison Square Garden?
By the way, it's to me, as a lover of stand-up comedy, I cannot understand why anyone would want to go watch stand-up with 20,000 people. The whole point is
small venue.
Yeah, the whole point is it's intimacy. The whole point is that it's a small room and they're working the guy in the back over there and the guy over here. 20,000 people. I mean, I have zero desire. Oh, whoever it is, literally, like Chappelle's on tour. I love Chappelle. I'm not gonna go watch him in an arena. That's just ridiculous.
It's impossible in 2023 to get consensus of everyone to act in unison to prevent someone from making a living like Louis C.K., right? It's impossible to get, because his voice has been taken off of cartoons. He cannot get the kind of access that a comedian would generally need to get echoing laughter from sea to shining sea. He says he's lost $35 million, lost it in an hour is what it is that he says. But it's not possible to get every venue. Like Cosby is thinking about touring, and I don't know that that will end up being something. I think there will be so many protests outside of places that venues will then be pressured to also not allow that to happen. But it's damn near impossible to get everybody to say, hey, nope. We're out on this. You can make us money, but we're out on the idea of you're making us money. I don't see how you end up doing that in 2023.
To get to the point where, like, the Cosby one is very interesting, right? Because obviously he's guilty of some pretty heinous stuff.
You can make the argument the biggest serial rapist in the history of our country.
Yeah, not counting Christopher Columbus and those guys. But yeah, welcome to Black History Month, by the way, guys. Hey.
Hey. Tom Brady stole your thunder already this morning.
Everyone's thunder.
Grumble, grumble, grumble.
That guy.
I can't lie. I'm going to say this, and a lot of people are going to be upset when I say this. Cosby is an awful person. Terrible. But you can't tell me you're not a little curious what he would say in stand-up, based on what's happened in his life over the last, if the hallmark of a stand-up comic is, I will take my life and I will create content out of it. I'll get a press pass so he doesn't get my money or whatever, but I have to find out what his mind, in his mind, is going to take what's happened to him and try to make it, this into content. There's the him justifying, I'm sure he's going to try and justify his actions, right? But then the other part of it is, again, you don't have to like him to understand the guy has a pretty wild comedic mind, right?
Oh, but he's so old, though. Like, comedy doesn't generally age into your 80s.
It doesn't.
Well.
It doesn't, but, like, there's still a—I mean, look, Mel Brooks is coming out with a History of the World Part 2. And, you know, Mel Brooks is 98. So do we expect that to not be funny, or is it going to be—it's Mel Brooks, right? Like, there's a—it's Mel Brooks, man.
I think it's fair what you're saying. People are—whether they spend money or not, they can get it word of mouth. They can get it in, you know, on social media. But I think people are going to be intrigued. What is Bill Cosby going to say? And are people going to show up?
Are you interested in what act? Someone who's been accused of raping dozens of women has to say? Like,
I'm not, but he's not wrong
on
this.
He got out
of
jail on a technicality. He shouldn't be able to do any of this.
Absolutely. No. Jess, all of that is right and correct, but I'm not interested in what he has to say in the sense of, well, hold on, let's hear what he has, not in that sense, but in the sense of, this dude went through some wild shit.
How are you going to pull this off?
How are you going to pull this off, right? And but also make it funny, right? There's a level of, like, almost like an obstacle course here where I just want to see how he navigates it. Because from out of sheer morbid curiosity, not because I support him, not because I think he deserves an opportunity to earn a living. It's none of that. It's just like, I just want to see him do it because I know this guy has some of the most iconic stand-up comic routines ever. And I know that great comedians build off of their life. And I know his life has been insane. The guy was in prison, and he was America's dad, and now he's like a rapist. We all realize this dude has been sexually assaulting women across decades, and it's been out in the open, and he's got to reconcile that fall from this mountaintop down to the absolute sewer.
This is the opposite, though, of the thing that a lot of people are struggling with, right? Because it seems to me like we've been talking for a long time around here. Can you separate art from artist? And in this case, what you're saying is I'm attracted to the art because the artist is so despicable, because his past has so much crap in it that is both interesting and awful, that you're interested in the degree of difficulty. You're making the argument on behalf of just the art. You are separating the art from the artist.
And it's not a stance. I'm not sitting here telling people, hey, you guys should. No, I get it. I'm not advocating this for anybody. But I do have a curiosity of, how is he going to pull this off?
Well, Louis C.K., I was wondering about this with Louis C.K. How is he going to navigate the labyrinth of being able to talk about this? And I don't know that he's done it necessarily well. He's won awards for his comedy album. He is clearly excellent at what he does. But the navigation of this, I was curious about it. And I don't think that he's navigated in a way where he's addressing it well or addressing it even in a way that's funny. There's funny with him, but it's not about his circumstance.
He's avoided his thing.
It's like even the creators of The Simpsons, right? Brilliant. Everyone would tell you the creators of The Simpsons can do anything. They can't resurrect Apu. They can't figure out how to do it. They're not clever enough and smart enough to be able to figure out how to resurrect the character if Hank Azaria is unwilling to do it because he says, oh, in retrospect, this is offensive that I would be doing this in, as a white man.
But the difference there is The Simpsons is this huge machine that makes money within the boundaries of mainstream. Apu is not a central figure to that. Right.
But they haven't been, you know, wait a minute. You know that clever people, clever, arrogant people who have had a great deal of success, you know good and well that they want the challenge of how do we figure out how to do this, and they haven't been able to figure it out.
I would imagine that when Hank Azaria says, I'm not going to do it, more than any other kind of external pressure, that probably is a red light of, all right, let's just leave it alone for now.
Switching topics, I did not realize.
Transition.
That what I needed in my life in the third episode of A Zombie Show.
Yeah!
is a gay love story involving Nick Offerman, but I needed it.
Ass off. Acted his ass off. That's the best acting he's ever done.
They spent an hour in a zombie show they're still setting up for us. They spent an hour on a love story involving Nick Offerman that barely had any zombie in it.
Well, there's one.
That's why it was the best episode of the season so far. Get those zombies away from me. Wow. Disgusting.
What? Jesus.
They're nasty.
Well, let's talk about the zombie phenomenon. I'd like to talk about this because I thought The Walking Dead, once they did 11 seasons, you know, six more than anyone needed, because we were in the same story again and again. Oh, they got to go out for supplies. How are they going to get supplies for the 11th straight season? These zombies are good zombies, but what is the fascination? I've never understood the fascination with zombies. This is a well-done
show.
They're
bad zombies, just to be clear.
They're very bad zombies.
Bad zombies.
All zombies are bad.
Yeah, they're not good zombies.
Yeah.
They don't have hearts of gold.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You're watching. What's your fascination?
That it's the second most popular thing HBO has ever done to start, and I trust HBO to make good television.
Eh.
Wait, do you like
they've
it?
They've had fluffs.
Yeah, I've liked the three.
All this.
So that's why you're watching, because you're enjoying it.
Yeah. I've liked the three. I mean, there's only been three so far.
But you're skeptical because you're like, I'm Dan Le Batard. I'm a writer. I can't like a zombie show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is untrue. I like World War Z.
Sounds like you like lots of zombie shows, Dan. Sound like a zombie guy, does.
Zombie Land, and that's about it. Like, I didn't
well,
like...
Well, that's like six that's zombie vehicles already. Zombies. Yeah,
it's
you like not, zombies,
it
Dan.
It is not all of
zombies.
Them.
You like zombies. It's okay.
Night of the Living Dead.
This is a safe place. You can like zombies.
Was I Am Legend zombies or vampires?
Vampire zombies.
Oh,
vampires kind of are zombies in a way because they can't die, right?
Yeah. I'm most interested in this type of zombie.
Hence Rick Pitino. Yeah.
Vampires can die.
Well, zombies can die too.
Yeah.
Yeah. They both can die.
But they're undead, like reanimated corpses, essentially.
Yeah. But this one's something has infected them.
Right. But some correct.
Yeah.
Vampires. Well, TBD. We don't know yet.
No.
They might exist.
Put somewhere. It on the poll, please, Juju, at Lebatard Show. Are vampire zombies?
They get infected with something that turns them into something else. I think it's very similar to what happens to a zombie.
I never considered this. You know what? Maybe.
The difference is vampires are sentient. While
and sexy.
So are zombies.
No.
Although
these
zombies are disgusting.
No. Although in Vegas there is a zombie burlesque show, and I'm like, who's this for?
Wait a minute. Did we just discover that Amin's a necrophiliac? What do you mean zombies? What do you mean zombies?
Let's not kink shame here.
What about the ones that click?
Clickers, man. Hey, what a great show, man. I was talking to Mike Fuentes and Tony earlier, because it's based on a video game, and so far through three episodes, it's fairly close to the video game, which I've played, but Tony hasn't. And there's a part of me is like, man, I wish I hadn't played the game so I could experience it like you guys are. The wonder of this story, because it's a great story. It's not Walking Dead.
Oh, but I haven't played the game, and I'm still interested in the way they're doing the photography and the film work, where I feel like I'm inside a video game while I'm watching it. How they're doing that, where they're making it so intimate that there are certain camera angles. It's artfully done. It's not, I don't know what I associate with zombie stereotypes.
Just to be clear,
you
did not play The Last of Us on
PlayStation,
right? Can you show up on our Twitch stream? Can we do GG with Miss Pac-Man and Dan?
Oh,
let's do that.
It's a really good show, though, and I think what is interesting is that the same guy that made the video game is one of the, you know, co-showrunners with an HBO guy who did the show Chernobyl, which was also about an apocalyptic event, which happened in real life, obviously. But it's also interesting because they've changed some things, like you said, Amin, but people who are fans of the video game, you know, you can't get so hung up on the changes because it's the same guy kind of reimagining things now that he's written subsequent video games with more backstory and things like that. So it's really interesting and it's well done. I think the characters are very interesting characters and they're very well acted out.
And if you watch the back end where they explain the episode, the showrunner who was part of the video game said,
if we want to stick with the video game stuff, we will. But if we derail from it, we want to have a good purpose for it. And last night's episode, or a couple nights ago's episode, was part of that kind of idea where, hey, this wasn't part of the video game, but this is such a good piece of content that we're going to go this way and then go back to the story.
But that is so bold.
Yeah.
So bold to make the third episode. You have to understand, they don't know that they're going to open as the second most popular thing in HBO history. Mm-hmm. To have the third episode locked up in Zombie where you just stop and are like, Nick Offerman, we're going to ask you for an hour to do, I don't even know the actor's name from Chippendales and White
Armand.
Lotus. Yeah, Armand from White Lotus, where we're going to spend an hour. We're not going to just deviate from the video game. In our third episode, we're going to spend an hour on a gay love story. That's pretty damn bold.
To be fair, Dan, they didn't know it would be the second.
We could just call it a love story.
Yeah.
No, because the gay
love
part
stories
is,
are love stories
is the part,
man,
that makes it.
Yeah, love is love. Yeah, exactly.
But the gay part is the part
love
that makes
love,
it so like, oh wow, that's a bold choice in terms of risking that early in the show. I'm not gonna give it away, but for a storyline that doesn't go much further beyond that episode.
There's gonna be flashbacks.
Sure, but I guess my thing is this, Dan, they knew. They didn't know it would be the second greatest premiere ever, but they knew this was one of the most talked about kind of projects on the Hollywood scene for
it's
the last couple of years.
Still bold third episode.
Sure,
you're going
sure.
far. It's not zombies. You're not doing zombies anymore. It's not a show about zombies.
But I would argue the video game isn't a video game about zombies either. Even though zombies are everywhere and you got to kill them and stuff, but the story of the video game is so incredible and so rich and really drives home the idea, I mean, it's not really a spoiler alert. We all know what the deal is. This little girl has the cure, and they've got to get her somewhere. And just the idea of, in the face of this worldwide disaster, what still constitutes humanity, right? Where people are saying, well, if she's bitten, then I got to kill her. And don't want to even ask the question of, wait a second, how is she still here or whatever? So the themes that the show and the video game explore really have little to do with zombies. It's I guess the only way I would describe compare it to Walking Dead is Walking Dead before they just thought every time we're just going to find salvation, but it won't be as things as it seems or whatever.
I think another good part too is when we talk about this love episode, it's love and love lost, right? Because mm-hmm. all of a sudden you see Bill and Frank at the end, they go up to the room, you know
spoiler.
What's going to happen
spoiler
with them.
Man.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
And then
you love to spoil
dude,
shit, Tony.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we're talking about a show.
We've
my
been
bad.
So careful.
Tony, go sit outside.
Oh,
go
okay.
Oh,
oh
my God.
You called for the wrong thing.
It's his fault.
I feel like you
literally have a ball in your hand.
2 minutes for staying on topic.
I can't
mean.
Make a decent point anymore. Okay.
No.
Just don't spoil things.
He's literally taking his ball and leaving.
I feel like if there's zombies in a show, like it's a zombie show. You know what I mean? Like it's like saying Madagascar, not really an animal movie. It's like, yeah, no, it 100% is an animal
not really,
movie.
Though.
No, Madagascar is 100% an
no,
animal movie.
Not.
The Minions is a Minions movie, and if there's zombies in it, it's a zombie movie.
The Minions is a capitalism movie. All right, let's make that clear.
Wow.
The Minions are the labor class.
Deep.
Put it on the poll, Juju, please, or the Minions capitalist movie. And also put on the poll at Lebatard Show, if you have zombies in your movie, is it automatically a zombie movie? I don't think once you have a zombie in your movie, I think that that's the genre you're in. You're a zombie movie.
I agree.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. I think the best shows are genre bending. So if you have a zombie movie that's about love or a love story, that makes it really interesting and compelling. And like we've seen over the last decade of TV, shows that have those things that are bending to different diametrically opposed genres are becoming the best things that we watch.
I think I figured it out because it's not necessarily true to have a zombie making an official zombie movie. What about Monster Squad? They had all the monsters in there. Was it then? It's a monster movie, right?
Yeah.
I think you can have it. I don't think it's genre bending to have it be symbolic of a variety of different things. For example, this zombie movie, it starts first 10 minutes will catch you because you are realizing that they are playing with what we're presently going through in these pandemic times to set up the storyline. So it can be about larger, broader themed things. But if I put a single zombie in the movie, I could put a zombie in Top Gun. and it is no longer a fighter pilot movie.
It is
a zombie movie.
It's a zombie fighter pilot. Like, okay, there's this movie on Netflix that I didn't realize was going to be like a zombie movie, and it's this zombie heist movie with Dave Bautista, one of the actors of our
generation.
What's
it called? Zombie heist?
I don't know what it's... No, it's not, because it was kind of like...
genre bending.
It was a misleading title where I thought, I'm just watching a heist movie.
Is that a Zack Snyder movie?
I don't know who makes it. I just watch what I think is going to be good. So then I go in, and 2 seconds in, it's like, boom, zombie, and
wait,
I'm like, okay.
Is this Army of the Dead?
It might
you
be.
You didn't realize that was a zombie movie?
No. I thought it was a heist movie. If I see
this
Army
in it. This is a zombie heist film on Netflix. I Googled it.
Hold on. Say that point. Whatever your name
Billy
is.
Billy is his name.
It's Army of the Dead. I don't
you
know
owe
why you could.
$10.
He
owes from before as well.
I mean, that's the biggest of fines
the
right there.
Didn't show zombies in it. I just saw Dave Bautista and I go, okay, I'm in.
Can you imagine?
Chris D'Elia's in it. Speaking of canceled comics.
Can you imagine, by the way, if Rudy Gobert had cordyceps?
Have a green screen anymore. Billy, Dave Bautista's in a movie. Hey. You're automatically there.
Yeah, are you not? I mean, why would you not be?
I think I'm in on A Knock at the Cabin. The reviews are good, and everyone is saying yet again, M. Night Shyamalan is back.
No, Mike, I said to you yesterday, he has the greatest catalog of movie previews in movie-making history.
They're saying he's back. They're saying he's back, even though this movie is being released in February. It has
Don't
all
fall
the reasons.
For it, Mike. I care about you.
I'm falling for it. I want to see it.
Have you watched The Servant at all on Apple TV, the M. Night Shyamalan? He's basically he's working with his family on stuff, and they're doing a fourth season of that show. I think it's one of the best things that Apple is doing. They've got a lot of stuff that's a note off. I do feel like Apple, I don't know whether this is being noticed, because Apple is so discerning with the choices that they're making, but they are also being very careful not to offend anybody. Super, super careful not to do anything that affects the iPhone money. Anything that affects
well,
the...
Would you?
Well, yes.
You would?
Yes, obviously, okay. I would.
I mean, the iPhone money.
How about all the times he's jeopardized our money?
Fair point, Mike.
He's about to do it again.
I have nothing to say. I'm out of this.
Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous. And if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me, I just bought 3 for my wife, daughter, and myself for game 1. I live it. Because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there, and I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed. Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
I feel like we need to normalize saying the scientific terms for organs on the air.
A
like
penis?
If someone, yes. You know what? If someone takes a foul ball to the penis, We should just say he took a foul ball to the penis.
See it.
Stugatz.
That free kick hit him right in the cock-a-doodle-doo.
This is the Don Lebatar Show with the Stugatz.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings app and use code LAF to get in on the action.
Is there anything worse than getting Peyton Manning's endorsement to be a head coach?
I mean, I'm certain there are worse things.
What do you mean by that? So I saw that the...
It feels like a pretty good thing, actually.
I saw that the Indianapolis Colts are weighing the fact that Peyton Manning is keeping up for Brian Callahan, the offensive coordinator of the Bengals, that's like his recommended guy. And I just feel like after what's happened with Adam Gase, where not one but two places... Peyton Manning put his name forward and put his reputation on the line for Adam Gase. I feel like if I were Jim Irsay taking that call, I'd be like, yeah, I really appreciate that, Peyton. And then I'd turn around to the gym and be like, scratch Callahan's name off the list.
Also, if I'm like Jeff Saturday, I'm like, WTF,
come on, man.
I do like all-time greats just like, you know, giving their... proper. I certify this guy. I give him my stamp of approval. Like everyone, I want to know who Dan Marino thinks should be the D coordinator for if in your market.
He lets it be known. My understanding.
Your legend. Wait, Marino does?
Yeah, Marino.
I mean, he works in the building.
Marino's
he
there.
Works in the building.
I don't have a legend.
Oh, come on, Stu.
Name him.
You don't have someone who
name the legend on the Jets. Go ahead, Revis.
Oh, he said name him. I'm like, yeah. No, it's name
it. I thought you said name it. I thought you had like a little mini stroke in the middle of name it.
Name him.
So great.
Looked at Mike, I was like, name myth?
Name the Jet legend that you would trust hiring, giving advice on who to hire as a coach.
Name him.
But
I felt like Zaslow.
You really wouldn't want someone, like, there's no one in Jets lore?
No.
Kevin Mawai?
No.
Wow. I trust Kevin Mawai would make a good hire.
Nick Mangold?
Oh, no.
Wayne Corbett,
Revis, maybe
Revis,
D coordinator.
Revis is one of the all-time great corners. You've had some great players in the history of the Jets. You're being a little bit unfair.
I mean, Revis is going to go into the Hall of Fame first ballot, and that will be exciting. That will be cool. But we don't have. I mean, Gastineau, Plecko, Wesley Walker.
Aaron Glenn's having a good career as a defensive coordinator, right?
Yeah,
I would classify
but he's a
Aaron
solid
Glenn.
Player.
He's not a Jets legend.
He's not a Jets legend.
Aaron
no,
Glenn had a couple of good seasons for them.
No, I know he did, Mike, but he's not a Jets legend. I mean, there aren't many. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
You only have three players who have been elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Right,
Namath. Maynard. Who's Maynard?
Don Maynard.
I think he's a front man for Tool.
He was a wide receiver with Namath.
And Curtis Martin in 2012.
Ooh, Curtis Martin.
My favorite.
Well, Fanica, too. I mean, cup of coffee.
Aaron Glenn was a first-team All-Pro in 02.
Mike, I know he's a good player. He's not a legend.
For the Houston Texans. Oh. Two-time Pro Bowler, though, for the Jets. I think if you make a Pro Bowl for the Jets, you could be classified in local circles as a legend.
The Texans have had more great players than the Jets.
Oh,
that's not a bad call.
Speaking of the Texans.
I mean, Arian Foster.
Andre Johnson.
DeAndre Hopkins.
You see J.J. Watt's all-time Look at Me Louie. Well, not all-time, but I mean, it's probably not even
the top 10.
Not even the top 10. But
what did he do now?
He tweeted out a picture of him and D'Amico Ryans. Look at me, Louie. In Houston Texans garb. And it was like, he's like, you're going to be on his staff. What are you saying, J.J. Watt? And we'll have to try and decipher. We'll have to, like, do the thing. And
just
J.J.
Say,
Watt,
look at me.
J.J.
It's his
Watt.
Endorsement.
Yeah,
that's his endorsement.
Exactly.
He's
endorsing him. Yeah.
That's a good call. I feel like J.J. Watt is probably the number one person at the Houston Texans organization. Like, J.J. Watt should come out. You're right, Chris. There should be, like, a convention of legends of all the teams that are available coaching hires. And we leave. There's white smoke that comes out of the building. And they all come out. And somebody stands.
They decide who your next coach is.
Somebody stands in front of the building, and Terry Bradshaw stands. I think the next Steelers coach should be And then that's the big endorsement.
But to your original point, I like the idea of players getting reputations for being terrible at their endorsements. So it's like, I don't want Peyton's endorsement because he thought Adam Gase made me good.
And there's nothing that should send a chill up the spine more of a Dolphin fan than Greg Cody writing the go get blank column.
So true.
Go get blank column. It's like maybe 25% hit rate.
Wow. So I'm gonna go back through the Greg Cody archives to see what the latest hits
I remember go get David Boston.
That was a good one.
We did, and he went in like two catches.
Go get Tony Martin.
So, Whitty, you want like a committee where it's Marino,
yes.
Duper, Clayton, Kim Bocamper,
I think
Larry Zonka, and they get together and they make
a lot of hair
they
on
make
that.
Decisions on behalf of the organization. Important.
The hair, it's a hairy committee.
Not decisions. Very hairy committee. Not decisions.
Name
because, like, I mean, you know, Stephen Ross basically gets to assess whether or not he thinks that these people have any expertise.
Yeah, Whitty, you are going to town on that microphone. You gotta stop.
You know what? Okay, Mike, I'm glad me and you saw it at the same time. I looked over, I was like,
It's very unsettling.
It's phallic?
Very phallic. Yeah, it's your microphone, too, generally.
Yeah, well, no, I just give it a nice little rub on the side, but this is just a good continuous stroke.
It's off camera.
It's not it's off our camera. Camera.
It's not off my camera, man.
I see that in 4K, bro.
I can't tell you how unsettling it is just to have someone deliver sports takes as they jack off a microphone.
It's forever ingrained in your camera. Just,
two people saw the same thing.
I'm a fidgeter. What do you want me to say?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Oh, wow. Baby.
If I may take your D'Amico Ryan's photo off to a more serious place, I am workshopping this take, and I have for like the last year. I think we're
really
getting closer.
A take a year in the making, huh?
Well, you know how the Rooney Rule has often been dismissed? It's a token interview, and when are we going to bring about real change? I think that the NFL is inching closer to instituting real change in their hiring practices with the draft compensation that teams are getting. If you look at king-making coaches like Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, these are teams that have given up a lot of draft capital in recent years trying to chase a Super Bowl. Look at what those coaching staffs look like now. You can fetch multiple third-round draft picks. You could replenish your draft capital by having faith in your head coach to kingmake. So hire these minority candidates as your assistants, as these teams have been doing, and all of a sudden, those trades that totally depleted you of your draft picks, they don't look so bad. I think we're starting to get about real change in the NFL, and we're just getting started.
Shitty that it's incentive-based.
I was going to say real change.
It's what it took.
Yeah.
It's what it took, because you have cutthroat GMs and owners trying to find advantages on other people, and that is not a little thing. A third-round draft pick is not a little thing. It could be the thing that pushes you over. And so you're having that be part of the discussion. And yes, it's sad, but the Rooney Rule wasn't working. We all looked at each other for 15 some odd years saying, this is not working. This is a joke. This is a joke of a process. It's all token. The thing that they're getting most out of this is maybe experience in job interviews. Well, now we realize that feeding them at the lower positions and having them go through that process and climb within certain staffs to the point of coordinator is a huge, huge deal for these teams. And the Rams and the Niners have been better than anybody so far at it, and we're only going to see more teams do this.
I agree. I'm a little bit bummed that it mostly happens on the defensive side of the ball. I was kind of saddened this year that Byron Leftwich clearly had a really bad year coordinating the Bucs offense, and I mean, he could have been the Jags head coach last year, we think, but we don't know.
Yeah. Keep in mind, Mike McDaniel was a minority candidate.
True. But I mean, mostly the genius offensive minds are white. And so
Eric Bieniemy needs to get a job, right? I mean, that's the one that's like, he's been dominating for five straight years.
Yeah.
Every good offensive coordinator gets that next job.
Keep in mind, there were reports out there that Bieniemy almost wasn't brought back last year. We're really upset with Bieniemy.
He's had some dust-ups with Mahomes, too, where like they clearly will have a go at each other. I think there was one time where they didn't want to run a two-minute offense late in the first half, and Mahomes was gesturing towards the sidelines. But I mean, you're right. And ultimately, if you're saying the Rooney Rule doesn't work, then the and I don't think that and like D'Amico Ryans won't care, although he is damn good at his job. Like coordinating that defense, he's done brilliantly, taking over for Robert Saleh. But if 3% of the reason why the Texans hire him is because they get a or that, you know, some other team gets a third round pick, like I think that's a he doesn't care. He doesn't care. Like he won't care that he got a job, at least in part, because maybe some other team gets a third round pick.
I think it's a leveling of the playing field that these candidates and these minority candidates have long been wanting. That many talking heads have been clamoring for, you're having, and it's uncomfortable to talk about. But when they're considering bringing a coach onto the staff, they're going to consider, this might be a future third-round draft pick for us if we go here. What's the difference between these two candidates? Why don't we take an investment in this person? And that's the opportunity that the NFL sought to create with the Rooney Rule.
It almost doesn't feel NFL-wide, though. It only feels like certain teams have the hierarchy structure to put that into place, right? Like, nobody's going to take a Texans coordinator and be like, hey, we're going to make this guy head coach.
Well, I hear you, and I think it's you have to be a successful program because your coaches have to constantly... There? There's not a lot.
There's three, four?
Yeah, your coaches...
Name us.
You have to have a program that's getting their coaches poached, because look at D'Amico Ryans. This climb happened relatively quick. That's a very successful. Saleh got a job. He was a minority candidate too, by the way. So Kyle Shanahan's been on this. The Niners have been on this.
He lost both coordinators in one offseason, right? Mm-hmm. McDaniel went, Saleh went. Like, now they're bringing up other guys. Now those guys are going to get potential jobs. But like
two off seasons.
Yeah, right. Two offseasons. Yeah, Saleh happened before.
Saleh went first, then McDaniel.
He lost him in consecutive offseasons.
But that's a team that has made moves and doesn't mind throwing around draft picks. They found a way with their head coach. That's why Kyle Shanahan is a hugely valuable commodity. This king-making strategist that not only gives you a tactical advantage, but because of his ability, can replenish your draft stockpile. It's huge.
Yeah, and it's on both sides of the ball. That's the strange thing, is that he's known for generating offensive philosophy. And McDaniel, like, it's bizarre that he even, like, McDaniel never called plays, and he still got king-made by Kyle Shanahan. Mm-hmm. And McVay didn't really either call plays before he showed up in Los Angeles. But you're mentioning one form of progress. The other, I guess, thing that hasn't really changed still, although we did see, you know, Lovie Smith get hired, but we saw him very quickly get fired. Todd Bowles is very quickly on the hot seat. Is you don't see a lot of retreads, a lot of retread black head coaches.
No.
Frank Reich gets fired in Indianapolis, and he gets a job very quickly again in Carolina.
Yeah, it's just Lovie Smith. It's just Lovie Smith.
Yeah, I mean, but Lovie Smith, we knew, like, it felt like Lovie Smith was there to be fired after a year.
All he had to do was make it to a Super Bowl in his career to become the retread, by the way.
Right, and crazy. And same for Todd Bowles. He, you know, coordinated a Super Bowl winning defense for that team. It's not like some other team hired him. But Stu, the other day I saw you say something about Steve Wilkes, the Carolina coach.
Who did a great job.
He did a great job. He probably should have come back. He had one bad season in Arizona. Got rid of him, and he doesn't get a chance to go again, despite the fact he was very good as an interim.
Now, with Frank, you're right, by the way. Like, I think he deserved the job, but Reich had five seasons, made the playoffs twice, and had a winning record with the Colts. And
he maintains his reputation.
Jim Irsay is Jim Irsay.
Reich maintains his reputation that he built in Philly, despite the fact that it went so wrong for him in Indianapolis, that he couldn't find a quarterback to replace Andrew Luck the entire time he was there. He tried to go back to Andrew Luck. It was revealed by Luck himself in an ESPN story that they just kept trying and trying and they couldn't find someone, and yet Reich still gets to maintain his reputation as offense guru quarterback guy.
And he's going to go do it again in Carolina because they haven't had a quarterback in 5 years.
Right, they're going to keep trying. Presumably, they'll draft someone early. They have to. God, if they go for veterans again, and Reich just ends up on the veteran quarterback carousel again.
His ninth year on it.
Right. I mean, it just... But
Derek Carr there.
But it's the same thing.
But
it's just guys in their 30s that might be past it. That Frank... But, like, you don't see it as often. And that, I feel like, is a next step that, like, you make. And the reason why I thought of it is because you described Sean McVay as a kingmaker.
Yeah.
Raheem Morris has not been kingmaked.
Not yet. He has.
He's been there for a while.
He's had head coaching experience. But if you go further down their coaches, it's really encouraging looking at the Niners and Rams coaching staffs.
I mean, Leonard Hankerson is a coach for the 49ers. We're at that age.
I was watching Trailblazers Hawks the other night, and I heard...
Why?
It was on NBA TV. When I'm at home, and I try and put whatever the national NBA game is on just to make sure that I'm watching some basketball. Do you know who's running basketball ops for the Atlanta Hawks? Landry Fields.
Yeah. I think he just got a promotion, too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Because Travis Schlenk, their old, the guy who was running things there, I guess was moved on or
Wait
was
a minute.
Promoted or something.
Bit of a Oklahoma quarterback?
No, that's Landry Jones.
Landry
Fields, playing in the XFL.
That would have been weird.
Landry Jones in the XFL.
Landry Fields was an early 2010s Knicks player.
Made me smile.
Linsanity. I think he was in Linsanity.
I think he was on the Linsanity.
He was like the small forward for the Linsanity.
But like, he can't be more than 35 years old. He's 34. He's running basketball ops for the Atlanta Hawks.
Good for him.
I'm alarmed at how like players that like I grew up watching or
does that make you feel old?
It does. I mean, I'm only 30.
Even though he's older than you?
I'm only 30, but it's like, wait, hang on. Landry Fields is at least 10 years away.
John Lynch is running the Broncos.
John Lynch.
49ers, but close.
That felt appropriate. He was old when I was watching football. I was like, all right, John Lynch, fair enough. You're running the show. But Landry Fields, that one really caught me by surprise when I was watching an NBA TV game. Sports.
That was sportsy.
Yeah.
And all it took was you jacking off a microphone for us to switch gears.
Yeah.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yeah! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.